baby. We shine in today because it is the DFS Army Fantasy Football Show. It's been a hot minute, guys. We got all four of us. We got Flex Matt. We got Flex Shane. We got Mike Dickinson. We got Brandon Adam. We got the original OG crew here to talk to you about NFL free agency, the path to the draft, and of course, how that impacts our fantasy football teams. Listen, we've heard Matt. We've heard Brandon. I'm going to throw it to you, Mike Dickinson. What's going on, brother? It's been a hot minute since we chatted.
It's just life. It's been a hot cycle with this, with the free agency, with the combine, everything like that. So as you know, Brandon and Matt are much better with the incoming rookie profiles than I am. So mm-hmm. I've been trying to play catch up. I don't think I'm caught up to where they are, but we're about to find out in this next hour.
It's impossible. Yeah,
yeah. It's impossible.
You could try.
So why do you think, why do you think you're in my network? Cause you guys are much better at it than I am.
Yeah, and he just wants to steal all of our players, Shane. Yeah. I'm excited to be back. It's all four of us back in town. You know, wake up San Francisco is how I feel right now because it is 6:30 a.m. on the West Coast, trying to suit Mike's needs over on the East Coast. It's incredibly early today. I'm sure I don't have pants on yet, but I'm ready to talk rookies and free agency.
To be fair, you wouldn't have pants on if this was at noon.
That is true.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Let's move along here. Let's go. Yeah, let's hear it.
Let's get into it. So first of all I want to say is for those of you who want to just feel a little bit depressed about how free agency shook out for your particular teams, one of my favorite websites is SpoTrack. I go to SpoTrack all the time. It talks about it's my main source for contract information. But there's this sweet little ability where you can go and you can search your team and the impact that they've done in free agency. And as a Patriots fan, it's sad and it's depressing. But I would say the biggest shakeup by far in free agency was the impact of Kirk Cousins going to the Atlanta Falcons. Drake London rises again. I'm not sure. Are we in yet on Kyle Pitts? Like, can he be a thing?
Yes.
Let's talk about it, Brandon. Drake was kind of your guy coming into the draft mm-hmm. a few years back. How do you feel about Drake now? Is he a top 12 dynasty wide receiver?
I mean, if you look at where he's getting drafted in startups now since this has come out, he's topped all the way up to anywhere near rankings across the board from what I've seen from other content providers are anywhere from wide receiver 9-8 to wide receiver 12. I'm not going to put him into the wide receiver 8 area, not even close yet. He has to prove more to me for that. But, man, he has the opportunity to be that next Justin Jefferson type volume hog for that offense, that Ram style offense, the Cooper Cup, that style. And with all the other signings of the trades for Rondale Moore, for Darnell Mooney, those are wide receivers. I have zero worry about competition for Drake London. If this is going to be London, Bijan, Pitts, the trifecta, the holy trifecta, the holy trinity is going to be unleashed on a fantasy football finally because of Mike Dickinson guy, Kirk Cousins. This Mike called this from months ago. From the end of the season, he said this is where he's going to end up being. And man, oh man, was he spot on this one. Everybody thought it was going to be Justin Fields, but it turns out it's going to be Kirk Cousins. And I couldn't be more excited.
Matt, what the hell is going on with Justin Fields? Like, is he going to is he destined for a backup role right now?
Yeah. See, this is the great part about this podcast is I wanted to talk a little bit about free agency, but not get drowned out in free agency because I think it's time to get back on the rookie train and seeing about what's gone on with free agency. It has definitely led its way to not a lot of spots left for Justin Fields. It seems like he is going to have to take a backup role at this point. A spot that, you know, everyone had thought, you know, as it was nearing is that the Seahawks were going to end up being a pretty good little option for him. As a Seahawk fan myself living in Seattle, it's typical Seahawk football in the front office to wait and just absolutely not pay a player what he's worth, you know, and we'll take the bottom of the barrel. And that kind of seems like what they ended up doing. They got a third round draft pick for Sam Howell, which pretty much kiboshes the entire Justin Fields market for a potential starting job for what the rest of these teams are looking like. It seems like it's the rookie way of life on the way. And I think Fields ends up getting dealt for absolutely pennies. And he's going to have to take a backup job. It seems like what's happening or what the news is that he might end up going to the Steelers, might end up going to a place where he probably is supposed to suit in as the backup, but with a option to compete for a starting role with someone that can mentor him. I probably like that opportunity because George Pickens is a little bit of a feisty guy. You know, you would think that he has a little bit of Jerry Jeudy in him. So Jerry Jeudy clashed a little bit with Russ, but on the way out, it seemed like their relationship was okay. But, you know, George Pickens is a beast that needs to be fed. And if Russell Wilson, whoever's there is smart, we'll probably feed him. Pickens is also kind of like Drake London, where his value seems to have gone up a lot since this Russ deal. And he was already looking pretty good near the end of that season there last year. So Justin Fields, I'm out on him. I was out on him. We really liked him in our startup that we just picked. Mike Dickinson had to go with him because he went late QB. For a long time there, it was looking like Mike.
It looked really good.
It looked like Mike was going to pull it out somehow for a long time there. But Mike, go ahead and comment on what you think about your Justin Fields startup share. I mean, you got him late enough to where you're probably okay with it, but still, I mean, not happy to see what's been going
down
here.
Well, so here's the thing, and here's what we got to consider. This is purely a thought activity, a contract agnostic. Where does Fields rank if he was going to be in this draft class? Is he QB5? Is he QB6? Is he QB4? So that's what you have to consider is where does he rank in this draft class and which team gets boxed out of their QB need? So we're probably going to see four QBs go in the top five picks. I mean, that's just the way it is. So then when you get to that run at like 11, assuming the Vikings don't trade out, which we're recording this on March 16th, and the Vikings have already added a second first round pick, with the thinking being they're going to use that ammo to jump up into the presumably into the top five to take a quarterback. Yeah. But still, so once you get to the back end of the front half of the first round. So I'm talking like 11, 12, 13, where the Broncos are, where the Raiders are, and where the Vikings currently sit, which one of those teams gets boxed out of their guy. And then which one says, all right, let's trade back and let's go talk to the Bears and let's move our third this year and our second next year for Fields, because what Fields offers us is better than what we're going to get in a day two guy, like in a Spencer Rattler and a Michael Pratt or something, or a Sam Hartman or something like that. That's where, and I've thought this once Fields didn't get moved, Chicago messed up. They should have moved him earlier, and they didn't. They sat. So they're going to end up costing themselves. But once all this shook out, once Cousins signed with Atlanta, and once Wilson went to Seattle or went to the Steelers, said, "All right, now what's going to happen is the Fields move is going to happen either at the back end, like at the end of day one, after day one of the draft closes, or before day two opens up." Kind of how we saw Tennessee make that move up before day two last year so they could jump up and get Levis. I think that's when we're gonna see movement happen. So if I'm Chicago, I do nothing except field phone calls from now until the draft, and then that's when I make my move.
Yeah.
So I think I still think we see Fields in a starting position when day one opens, and that's not just because I have him and I fucking need him to start. That's because I legitimately think if he was in this draft class, he would probably be QB 4, 5, 6. And there's teams that recognize that and know that they can get QB 4, 5, 6 for much less than it would cost them in the draft this year.
You know what's crazy? If you compare Justin Fields' numbers straight up with Lamar Jackson's in the beginning of his career, they're identical, guys, like identical. Mm-hmm. And this is, it just shows you that even when these teams draft these quarterbacks high, you got to fully commit to the style of the quarterback and not force your system on these quarterbacks. And that is, to me, one of the biggest things that happened with like Trey Lance, Justin Fields, That's the biggest boo-boo that a GM and a coach can do is literally force a scheme down a player's throat like they did and not fully commit to him. If you take Justin Fields in the top five like they did, then you commit to that guy for 5 years. and you make an offense around him, period. And like Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. But they fumbled the bag, and they're going to – yeah, it's just – it's unfortunate. Justin Fields is going to get the short end. But, yeah, it's kind of nasty out there for him right now.
I'll try to transverse this conversation real quick back to the rookies like I'd love to do. But it just screams to me that Marvin Harrison Jr. is being drafted at 3 to the Patriots. That's exactly what that screams to me, because Patriots are sitting in that second round sweet spot where they end up trying to make some move for Justin Fields instead of play their dice rolls in the QB market. You know, the reality is that it's scheming out to be that nobody loves Drake May. Even though there's a lot of NFL people that really do. I mean, I can understand why. It seems like everybody that does loves the strong arm, but no, we got to get a little bit real here with the running QB option in today's NFL with the younger coaching areas, just everywhere in the NFL. It seems like that's where we're moving to. Those are the guys getting paid a lot of money outside, even Russell Wilson, right? I guess he could be kind of typecasted as a shifty running QB, but it seems to me that that's the absolute best way to go. You got a 1-year rental and a head coach over there in New England. And if you want to win today, you're not drafting a rookie. I mean, you got to hope to hit with that guy. If it's Drake May, if it's Jaden Daniels, you're really in a hope scheme. We don't think that any one of those QBs past Caleb can come in right away and absolutely light up the league. It's not that I'm an anti-Jaden Daniels or anti-Drake May guy. I just believe that if you're going to want to win this year more than three, four games, you see Bryce Young, one of the best QB prospects coming out outside of his size. Can't win more than a couple games, right? Yep. So going to an atrocious team like New England and having a rookie QB, this doesn't seem like a good spot. They couldn't do it with Mac Jones. So draft Marvin Harrison, play for Justin Fields in the QB market more towards the second round. And I'm feeling a lot better about what's going on there in New England, Shane. You love New England, isn't that? I mean, on the high side is probably what you would love to see that coming out of the draft.
Well, I think that what this really comes down to is what realistically are the Chicago Bears going to want for Justin Fields, right? Like we just saw the Patriots trade away Mac Jones, who was in the same draft class as Justin Fields. I think Fields was what, pick eight or nine in the draft that year? If I recall, Chicago actually traded up to get him. Mackie went at 15, right? So, okay. And then you look at the success of their careers. Both of them were kind of played out. I feel like both players were completely mismanaged in terms of their strengths. And then he became a pariah last year. This is Mac Jones specifically. So they trade him away. He's going to be back up in Jacksonville, which I guess good on Mac, right? If he can go and be a pro for another year and then become a free agent.
Go sell insurance.
Yeah, that's pretty much right.
In khaki pants. Jeez.
That's exactly what he looks like, dude.
To answer your question, Shane, quickly, I would say at the very least, it's a fourth round pick. At the very least, even if you're bailing out on him, I think if New England is entirely pleased with the process, they get him for a fourth round pick. But I think a third round pick, I mean, there's no way Sam Howell and Justin Fields have equal value. In my personal opinion, I think the rushing upside is there. You saw how well Justin Fields really can play last year. I mean, you got him a dynamic weapon, and DJ Moore was really dynamic last year. I mean, putting up a 40-point weeks in fantasy sometimes. Justin Fields had top three finishes, I believe, three times last year, which, I mean, if you have top three upside in production, I mean, I know that's on the fantasy football field, but still, it's got to translate somewhere for your real NFL team. I just think a three, no worse than a four. But Shane, if you're taking a third round draft pick for Justin Fields, you got to go Marvin Harrison at three. And let's say that is what we're doing here. And I want to pose this question to everybody. We'll start with Shane, 'cause that's his guy. But Marvin Harrison Jr. to me going at three, or neighbors going at five to the Chargers, who's getting drafted first? I mean, I'm going to make an argument that I'm going to say it's neighbors with Justin Herbert over Marvin Harrison with, I don't know. And even if they do end up with Fields, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to end up. I don't know if he's going to want to play in the snow all the time. He is a cold weather quarterback already right here, you know, but still, Shane, neighbors or Marvin Harrison.
If if it's my choice. Yeah. If it's my choice at three, in all truth, I want the Patriots to trade back. Right. I think there's going to be enough teams that are going to be hungry enough for that high end elite talent like a Marvin Harrison or Drake May or Jaden Daniels. There's going to be teams that are going to be interested in that. It doesn't make sense right now. I mean, listen, Marvin Harrison, even Malik Nabers, these are the types of talents that can be game changers for a franchise, right? But at the wide receiver position, is it enough if you don't have anybody throwing in a ball? So yes, Matt, if the Patriots can actually acquire a player like a Justin Fields, then they want to go and draft that. I don't know. It's a bit of a luxury pick, right? To go wide receiver at three overall. I still view that as a bit of a luxury pick. But
draft the Hall of Famer, baby.
You better believe it. I'm going to be dancing on my chair when they go, and if they actually go and they pick the wide receiver. And what are the odds right now? What are the chances, like, of Malik Nabers actually being the first quarterback off the board? Like, is there any sort of
Malik Nabers first quarterback?
First wide receiver off the board.
First wide receiver off the board.
It's early. Leave the guy alone. It's early.
Sorry. But what are the chances? Like, you guys like to look at the betting markets, the prop markets, right? Like, is there there's definitely a high value there that has Nabers as the wide receiver one, as the overall complete wide receiver in this class, because he can do a little bit more, right?
There's no chance.
There's no chance, but yeah, I agree with you on that. But Nabers is
a chance. There's no Nabers. Chance.
Brent, we were before we went live on this show, the thing we were just talking about is the content that we talk about relative to the draft is going to be blowing up in about a month and a half time when the NFL drafts happen, because everything we expect to happen, if it was that easy, doesn't happen, people. I got news for you.
Exactly right.
There's going to be
exactly right.
There's going to be some defensive players drafted here. It's not just all fantasy football. So it's as much as we say that, listen, the biggest heartbreak for me is when the Patriots go defense when – frankly, that they actually have a pretty solid defense still.
Okay,
right?
Can we answer the question, Shane? Malik Nabers goes five to the Chargers. Yeah. Marvin Harrison goes three to the Patriots. Who are you drafting first in your fantasy football league in your dynasty drafts coming up a week or two after?
Yes, all right. Ooh, totally like tough. Didn't even hear the question. No, I love Marv, man. I'm going Marv. Wow. I don't care.
Okay, Shane's going Marv. Mike Dickinson, get us on the right train here, Mike.
You're gonna hate my answer. I'm going Marvin as well.
God. Oh, dude, that's a ball. It's Nabers.
Here's where I'm at though. Here's why. So when you look at them from a talent standpoint, would you say Marvin is the better pure prospect than Nabers?
Yes,
has better upside. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So we're sending Nabers to the Chargers, and we're sending Harrison to the Patriots. Patriots OC is Alex Van Pelt. Last decade, Alex Van Pelt has been with the Green Bay Packers. He's been with the Cincinnati Bengals, and he has been with the Cleveland Browns. Now, he was with Stefanski at the Browns, so kind of chalk him off. He wasn't really the OC there. He was the OC. But when you put him in, you look at what he did with what he did in Cincinnati, what his tutelage was in Cincinnati, and then what his tutelage was in Green Bay. He worked with Rodgers, worked with that passing game in Green Bay, worked with Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. So This is a passing game offense pedigree. The look of this New England offense is going to be completely different. You look at Greg Roman and John Harbaugh in LA, and from an NFL standpoint, it's going to be a tough team to defend against. But from a fantasy standpoint, like, who was the last fantasy relevant wide receiver that the 49ers had in the Roman Harbaugh era? Is Michael fucking Crabtree. Like, you're not drafting Malik Nabers to be Michael Crabtree. Like, so I think that when the talent and the draft capital is this close, you got to default to systems. And I like the New England system better than currently where the Chargers sits.
I really like that explanation. That's pretty good.
Yeah, Mike is always good for this random bits of information that actually are like relevant to the conversation instead of just what we think. Brandon,
just scheme. Scheme.
Can you, Brandon, can you say it for the other side? I mean, why would it be Neighbors over Marvin Harrison Jr. if in the two different picks, two picks away from each other here?
Honestly, because this Neighbors is the most dynamic wide receiver coming out of LSU since Jamar Chase. He is the leader in the clubhouse for the University of LSU right now with receptions. Neighbors is more versatile in an inside outside guy. Since they got rid of Allen, he can replace Allen like that. They will not miss Allen whatsoever. What they are going to miss is the fact that Herbert is going to have to relearn another wide receiver. He's going to have to relearn another offense. So I don't know. It's very close, but I'm a Neighbors guy, so I don't mind doing that at all. It's a hot take. Like, if I was owning the 102 and in this situation happened, I probably would trade back and go to four and get Neighbors and get a little juice on top to trade back away from Marvin, because I really, until New England shows me they can do it and be a real offensive team and actually show me, I'm not going to invest into it, man. Like, I'm just not. Like, I have a hard time doing it, but you're exactly right, Mike. The coaches that they are setting up over there, this is going to be a modern type high-flying offense that they're going to try and mimic. And Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be the linchpin to do that. I think the move for the Patriots is exactly that. Take Marvin, go get Fields, and go rock, and go have. And you could be somewhat competitive this year by doing that. Somewhat.
I'll tell you what. This is really what it is. Marvin Harrison Jr. would have to turn around and go man to man with Jalen Ramsey, Scott Sauce Gardner. Okay. Oh, yeah. And the defenses are going to make sure to key on Justin Fields' weaknesses, where there is no way you can stop Justin Herbert and Malik Neighbors. The volume has been there with Keenan Allen, the shorts, the outsides. Marvin Harrison doesn't do that. He can do it, but that's not necessarily what he's going to be schemed in to do in that offense. They're going to probably play for a year or two down the road, try to figure out how they can get some more pieces in there to be effective, versus the Chargers are going to throw the rock like they always have been. Even though Harbaugh's there, you imagine the team's just going to turn around to a running team. They don't have a running back. What are they going to do? Draft a guy and give him 500 touches? It's not really going to happen. Justin Herbert's arm has shown to be wildly effective with volume to his receivers. Now we're going to put Neighbors in, the only option for him.
I love it for Neighbors. Yeah.
Outside, it's going to be Neighbors, but you're right. If you have the pick with Marvin Harrison, you trade it back. And it'll still accrue a ton of value now, but man, you get a little bit nervous there. But hopefully it's a Justin Jefferson situation where you draft him to the Vikings. Vikings suck, and it just puts butts in the seats for a while. I mean, that's how I see it. Shane, go ahead, roll us somewhere else here.
Yeah, no, I think like we right now are working on a post combine pre NFL draft mock draft for one of our leagues. It's a league that Matt put together. And right now, Marvin Harrison went 2 overall, and then Malik Neighbors actually fell to 1.6. Now, obviously, it's a tight end premium super flex format, right? But it went Caleb, Marvin Harrison, Brock Bowers, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, then Malik Neighbors fell. Do you think that there's still going to be somebody in that draft room that's still going to go and take, no matter what, no matter where Marv goes, he's going to be probably either 1 or 2? Or do you think definitively Neighbors will jump ahead of him? Like,
well, that's what I'm saying is if he gets drafted in this situation there, and we're talking about this exact situation, there will be a lot more variability.
Variability. There you go. Variability. Big word.
There will be so much more variability. So we're seeing it's 100% Marvin and no Neighbors. It's going to come more into that 60-40 range if that happens.
100%. I totally like that. We were talking about before this pod, everything that we think we know is going to be thrown the hell out once the draft cap gets put in place for these players and we can figure out what we want and what's what. But it's fun to talk about it, and based purely off talent, it's just I think this draft that we're doing is just basically to tell us, are we on the right track as what the NFL teams are looking for and the way we are drafting these rookies and how we value these rookies and the order that we think they're going to end up going in. And that's what's fun about this draft that we got going on right now. And right on, we just shared it on the screen so you guys could take a peek at it. And you can see what kind of movement these players have had. And still some surprise picks that with players that didn't have a great combine, like Troy Franklin, my guy, still ended up going in the first. So people are disregarding some of that new information that we got. So this is the kind of good stuff that I like to see. And it gives you a little bit of a market, a little perspective on what the marketplace is going to be.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about this mock draft once it finishes up here on our next podcast. But actually, while we're here and we're talking wide receivers, this is a question I wanted to get Mike's take on, because
yes,
we have not had Mike around for too much of the rookie content. But Xavier Worthy, 4-2-1, Mike, 4-2-1, and he seems to be the hot commodity on receiver talk. It seems like the NFL market is going to push him into the first round. A lot of people did not have him in the first round up until he ran 4-2-1. But you know NFL loves speed. Two-part question for you. One, is Xavier Worthy a first-round pick based on the speed? And two, if he goes in the first round and he's to a Buffalo or a Kansas City, seems to be the loving pick. I mean, how high are you drafting him?
So just real quick, just for the people, because for people who aren't as into it. So this is from JJ Zacharyson, but some of the statistical comps that he has, just for people who are still learning about these players.
I like it.
Marquise Brown, Jordan Addison, Jahan Dotson. He's 5'11", 165. So he's quick, but he's small. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, so I think, so there's the first part of that question, is he a first-round pick? Should he be? No. Will he be? Probably, yes. So you look at the mistakes the NFL has made getting enamored with speed. John Ross, Henry Ruggs, like, it's just, it's super, super sexy seeing a 4-2-1. It really is. And I get it. Like, you want to make a splash. Part of the thing when you're drafting is you got to figure out what's going to make your team better, but what's going to put butts in the seat. So from that standpoint, I get it. But that... The size speed thing is attractive, but honestly, it doesn't really do much for me. I don't like the smaller guys. Like, and I took an L on Tank Dell because he was just too small for me. Now it remains to be seen whether or not this year was the anomaly or whether he will be the anomaly where he has this long career. But I mean, history shows that he's a great dynamic explosive player, but he's not going to be able to sustain it. So
he's already injured. So
yeah. So, and I think Xavier Worthy got hurt running at the combine, no pads, just underwear, running in underwear. And he got hurt. So for me, even if he gets first round real draft capital, I'm not taking him in the first round. And for that reason, I probably won't have a ton of him, which honestly I'm fine with. I have no John Ross exposure, no Henry Ruggs exposure. Candidly, I have no Jameson Williams exposure, and I'm fine with all of it.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm right there with you with Xavier Worthy. I think Xavier Worthy is going to get steamed up probably into the 110 area, most likely consistently in most drafts, because most people are just going to be surface looking into what he is. Figure out, it really is landing dependent for that guy, to be honest with you. If it's landing, if he gets to go to the nuts place, like let's say it's Kansas City, which is not, because they just signed Marquise Brown. It's funny that that Worthy is comp to Brown, right? And Hollywood Brown ended up being right to Kansas City during free agency, and makes a ton of sense to me for that to happen. but we all overdrafted him, Hollywood Brown, when he came out. And guess what? He never was that number one guy ever. It's just not in the cards for what the prospect profile is. And I think that's why Tank Dell is so good, is because Nico Collins is really the one. Nico Collins is really the one. So you can have that super explosive, fast, shifty player on the other side that can beat man coverage. And that's exactly what Worthy is going to be. And
over the field, like kind of like a backyard football situation. Yes. That's what you love to have about those shifty fast guys is that, hey, do I need you to be a one? No. So why don't you just go out there and do some things? That's the difference between Devonta Smith, is he actually plays a more of an X role as a number two instead of a slot guy all the time. And I think that's what actually leads to his downside, and we saw it last year at the end of the season when AJ Brown was out and he had to move to the X position, and he's just not suited for that role, even though we like Devonta Smith here. So Shane, go ahead and take this onto another position here.
Sure. Yeah, just to kind of put a bow on Marquise Hollywood Brown, though, the player did show that he could demand a high target share, right? Granted, he was typically the only available viable target in an offense, but he did show he could get 14 didn't he get like 18 targets one game, like some insane number.
Yes.
So he can't demand a lot of targets. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Well, so did Tank, right? Like, and I know it was on a blocking scheme, but these small players have a higher like chance of getting hurt just because they're smaller, right? That's just
physics. It's just true.
But so one of the things, So one of the things too that I think has been a general theme of the rookie talk is that the running back class is not strong this year, right? So even in our draft, the first player was Jonathan Brooks, and he was drafted at the start of the second. So I guess my question to you guys is, there was a major shakeup at the veteran running back room with all the free agency talk, right? Josh Jacobs went to Green Bay. Saquon Barkley changed his colors, and fly eagles fly, baby. He's now an Eagle. DeAndre Swift, who I think we still think has an opportunity to recreate his career, is now in Chicago. Yeah. Tony Pollard is in Denver. The King is in Baltimore. So there's been a ton of shakeup. So
Tony Pollard's in Tennessee.
Tony Pollard's in Tennessee. So let me throw this out to you, Brandon. Like, which one of these players makes you the most excited? And let's talk about like best ball right now. Are you more comfortable drafting a Kyren Williams around the 1-2 turn? Or do you lean more like a Saquon Barkley? Like, is there enough there with the tush push where you think he's got that upside, he can get double digit touchdowns in a season, that he's worth taking those picks?
I'm taking Barkley in that position. But so Barkley, I think he's bigger than Swift. Okay. He's better than Swift in all facets of the game. He is a finisher. Swift had a nasty little trait that he didn't finish the damn runs, man. He just didn't finish the runs, and that was what really, that's probably why they moved on. It's because he kept falling inside the one, inside the two, inside the five, over and over and over again, and not finishing the run. And so they got the big bet. Yeah, what's that?
It's because because Swift, when he would drop his shoulder, he would get hurt.
Yeah.
It's
because he doesn't drop the shoulder like he used to. And when he was a rookie, he used to finish runs a little bit, and then he kept having to get that shoulder harnessed up, and issues after issue with the right shoulder, right? So I think Barkley is going to end up being – I don't think the tush push is going to be as prevalent next year moving forward, because Kelsey's gone. It's not – you don't have that savage in the center just – saying fuck my life and just making it happen. Like this guy, that Jason Kelsey is going to be dearly missed. So that's why they got Barkley. I think Barkley has a real chance, man. I think he's going to have a career year. I think this is going to be that special year that he's been striving to get. But I think the biggest winner of the free agency for running back is probably Josh Jacobs. For value wise, I think Josh Jacobs is still young. He's going into a great offense. Nobody there besides AJ Dillon. AJ Dillon is garbage. We know that he's just a straight up, backup. But Josh Jacobs,
AJ Dillon is gone. He just
resigned.
Oh, they just resigned. Okay, good.
Yeah, he just resigned. But I think Josh Jacobs has quite a little bit of sneaky value and is right back to what he should be. But also Derrick Henry. I think Derrick Henry in that scheme with Baltimore, man, is going to be dangerous for this year. If you are if you are going all in and you are a win now team, that is a guy I want on my team in a flex spot every single time on my roster going with the Ravens. I think we're going to see him really shine. And everybody's got to understand, the first 2 years of Derrick Henry's career was split time with DeMarco Murray, boys. Like, he literally did nothing for his first 2 years and then got put into the workhorse. So he has a couple more years of production, I think, that is still going to be RB1 value. That is a guy that I'm targeting if I'm a win now team, for sure.
Mike, so Brandon, take it away on Saquon Barkley. Let's go. Yeah, I mean, Mike.
No, I know. He wants it.
Real quick. Before he says that, just talking about, like, Henry as a flex, his current ADP in underdog drafts is 42. He's going as the RB11. So it's conceivable. Conceivable. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see as much drop off on the Philly O-line as you think. Jeff Statlin's still the head coach, is still the O-line coach there. Cam Jurgens has been on that roster since 2022. They drafted him to be the replacement for Kelsey, knowing that Kelsey was going. Kelsey been mentoring him. Kelsey said that Jurgens is the only guy that they brought in who could replace him. That's one of the reasons he was comfortable retiring. But I do think to what you guys talked about earlier, like, Swift was not a finisher. Barkley is 100% a finisher. Yes. So his touchdown number is going to jump up. I think the other thing is you look at the OC change. So they let go of their OC. They brought in Kellen Moore, who was with the Cowboys for a while, was with the LA Chargers last year. And I think that offense is going to look a little bit different. We saw when Kellen Moore was in Dallas, two running backs coexist. And quite honestly, they both put up, if they had both been healthy, they both would have put up RB1 seasons in Zeke and Tony Pollard. Now, I think that where Barkley is now is better than late career Zeke. And I don't think that either whoever the number two is in Philly is as good as what Tony Pollard was. So I think you're going to see Barkley on the field all three downs, probably 70% of the series.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's easily a top six RB. Honestly, if I'm in the back end of the first round and now this is in redraft or in best ball, I'm hammering Barkley or Henry or one of those guys there. Those are the guys that I'm taking because those guys are rare now. The guys that are going to give you, they'll give you 15 games and they'll give you 20 to 23 touches a game.
So Mike, we're not really talking about the declination of the line as far as taking Kelsey. I tried to redeem myself with the word. Right. Did you see it?
Is declination a word?
He tried. I don't even think that's a word, dude.
Look it up. Okay, listen.
Oh my God.
We're not talking about the O-line declining in the fact that can they run the ball. We are specifically wondering if the tush push on the goal line is the primary option. If it is still the option,
it's not going to need to be an option because Barkley's not a
pussy.
That's
what I'm saying.
Swift was.
What I want to know, as you're an Eagles fan that kind of knows the insides of what you may be hearing a little differently than what we may be experiencing it on the outside as just hearing from media. But if the tush push declines this year, Barkley is going to surge up. Do you think the tush push is going to be brought back in and as high output offense play on the goal line? I mean, that's the deciding factor between a Barkley and a this player or that player.
No, I don't, because I think it's such a physically taxing play. And I think they ran it because they needed to run it. Like,
right.
I think that's just long. That's long. Like, when we're in college, we eat ramen because we fucking got to eat ramen. But like, when you can afford some Chipotle, you can afford Chick-fil-A, you can afford to go to like a Ruth Chris or something like that, you're like, fuck it, I'm not eating ramen. I'm going to get me some Ruth Chris. Like, so you do what you got to do to serve. You got to do what you got to do to survive.
Okay. I love that take. Now I'm going to catch Mike here right now, because at first, so what people don't know is we're in a group chat. We're talking, you know, all day long, every single
day. Our group
day.
Chat is stupid.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
You'll go out for 2 hours and come back to 251 messages. Me and Brandon just argue.
So true, dude.
But okay, Worthy. So Mike was not in on Worthy because of speed, but seems to be in on Garendo because of speed. 4.33 Isaac Garendo. You dropped that bomb yesterday, is that you liked him a lot.
He's also 6'1", 220.
Okay, give it to me, Mike. Tell me why you liked the guy.
Well, I took him in the third round of a pre-draft mock startup. So I think when you get to that point, like, who else is going around there? You get to the back end of the third round, and it's all dart throws at that point. So, pre-draft, I'm banking on him landing at a spot that is RB needy. So, like, in my mind, he's a perfect fourth round fit in Miami. Raheem Mostert is fast. He's big, but he's also old. He got a lot of miles on him last year. He goes down. They give A-Chain the same workload. They slide Garendo in there, and he becomes at worst a back end, a high end RB2. Potentially he's a back end one. So I kind of like that. I like that speed size dynamic. I mean, that's rare. Now he couldn't break through at Wisconsin. He couldn't break through at Louisville, but I wonder how much of what happened at Louisville his senior season was because of who was there with him. Johnson was there with him, and they're both going to be drafted this year. They're both capable running backs. So I don't know how much of that is talent-based versus scheme-based, but if anybody helped himself in the combine, it's Garendo.
Yeah, yeah, Garendo, I agree. And then I want to bring this back to our free agency spots. You know, so we talked about these running backs, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry. I think the NFL is telling you exactly what the market seemed to believe about this running back class from the very beginning, is that it is weak. You know, we talk about how these veteran running backs, you've not seen this over the last couple of years. We're now, okay, let's invest in these guys. Well, why? Well, this class really isn't all that it's made up to be, and we can't go out and maybe your best guy's on injured reserve and he's not going to be able to play for the first, you just don't know about him. But Garendo seems to be moving up. Jalen Wright seems to be moving up, and that's Brandon's guy. Also two fast guys. Now, Brandon, I would argue that I would take the round differential with Garendo because you had to grab Jalen Wright in the second round. Can you defend that? Now, what we're talking about here in free agency is that the spots have been pretty much log jammed. I mean, we don't see a lot of opportunities now. Baltimore was a good spot to go to. It's not there anymore. The Packers spot, man, weren't we salivating on, man, if Blake Corum could go to the Packers, that would be amazing, right? So now it seems like the two nut spots for these rookie running backs are a late round selection to Miami, which would be a good little option, but the Chargers also seem
Chargers.
To be now Chargers. We're right there. It seems like Blake Corum is getting shoved into that position, but I would probably lean back a little bit and say that Trey Benson has started to really run away as the RB1 of the class next to Jonathan Brooks, but Jonathan Brooks is injured. So those two guys, I would say, are now in really a tier above most of these other guys. But Brandon, bring him back to Jalen Wright. I mean, there's not a lot of positions where these guys could go now because of free agency, but you still like the guys, you still like the talent. I mean, do you think that they're going to end up pulling through or still going to end up being one of the worst draft classes?
I think there's going to be two guys that end up coming out of this class. Whoever lands with the Cowboys, one, because they're going to get a shit ton of work.
Oh, yeah, completely spaced on the Cowboys. Two. Yep, that's a nuts landing spot as well.
Number two is the Chargers for me, because Gus Edwards is just a guy. I don't care if he played with the Ravens. I think he is just a guy. He'll be a goal line back a little bit here and there too. But I think we're going to end up seeing Blake Corum as a Charger. I really think that's going to – it's just – Harbaugh loves the guy. I think he's going to end up going to get that. Literally, when I see Blake Corum, I see Doug Martin, man. he literally looks exactly the same on the field, and I think he can be a lead back, and he can lead a offense and be able to carry that workload. But my guy, Jalen Wright, I want Jalen Wright to end up with a team that actually can spread the ball, have in a spread offense like he was in Tennessee, get the a lighter box, try and have some outside weapons. If he can land on a team with that kind of outside help, he can be a guy that is going to be able to finish and be able to finish from distance, man. I like guys, especially with, I think with this class, the way I look at it is this. If the NFL is saying, hey, these guys aren't, they don't bring the production, they don't bring the kind of the kind of profile that they like as a number one back, then I'm taking some freak show athletes and trying to take some shots on that. And if I'm and in our draft, I took Jalen Wright 2-9, and that was behind Brooks, Benson, and Corum. So he'll be the fourth back off the board, and I think that's pretty much where I would want to be taken at. And I had, if I, with that pick at 2-9, I was looking at either Jalen Wright, Roman Wilson, or my guy, Marshawn Lloyd. Marshawn Lloyd, another explosive back. I comp him to J.K. Dobbins type guy, DeAndre Swift. That's the type of guy. But with, like I said, once the draft happens, we're going to find out who the back is, the two or three backs that are going to get steamed way up because of landing spots. And that is the most important part of any of these backs. I don't care about their talent, really. I just want to know where they're landing with these guys because there's no dominant player.
I think with that, Brandon, like the four that we just talked about, they're probably I think they're the consensus top four backs. And it feels like those four guys are starting to really distance themselves from the rest of the guys. Like these are the players that could be in consideration in round two or three, right?
Yep.
Day two, yeah. And then we do know that round four running backs are still sometimes fantasy relevant, but from there,
look at Damian Pierce. Good first year, nothing after.
That's because he was slow. He's a slow.
Understood. Yeah. And that's one thing that I love about there's some real speed with some of these guys, man. Like that was kind of shocking with how fast the overall class was for the RB position. I really didn't see that much speed. So the speed profiles are good. It's just production, man. It's just the production profiles of some of these guys. And that's really what it's about. But the wide receiver position is so deep in this class that all these RBs are going to get pushed way down. So you don't got to take – you really aren't going to have to take a high-end pick and take shots on these guys if you don't want to.
Hey, Mike, can I ask you about a guy that I really love that I've just loved, and now sits in an amazing position here, but Chase Brown. Cincinnati Bengals, right? Now, I mean, we're talking about a guy that, in my opinion, he has the full package. If Chase Brown was in this running back class, he would probably be that two or three. I think he would probably be right behind Corum just because of production, but he would be your fourth guy. He's fast, he's big, he has production, and now he ends up on a high-end offense with some opportunity. What running back – Mike, I want to know what you think about Chase Brown. And then also, if Jalen Wright is the guy draft, you know, we look from Jalen Wright down, right? Jalen Wright, Ray Davis, Marshawn Lloyd. I just feel like if any of those guys, because the Cincinnati Bengals aren't drafting a top four running back. I mean, they could surprise us and do it, but I doubt it. If one of those guys gets drafted to Cincinnati, it's got to be wheels up for Chase Brown, right, Mike? Or am I wrong?
Honestly, I don't know. You remember what a disaster it was when Mixon and Perine were there. You had Mixon as the bell cow, but you had Perine coming in and subbing in the most inopportune situations. You remember the end of that Super Bowl with
Jalen Wright sucks, low-key. Sorry, bro.
Yeah,
no, he doesn't.
The problem is that those guys signed Zach Moss too, and when Zach Moss filled in Indy for Jonathan Taylor beginning part of the season, he was an RB1. And when Jonathan Taylor got hurt at the end of the season, Zach Moss was an RB1. So
yep.
I think what you get is a fucking nasty split. I think you're a 55-45 split. And I don't know which end of that Chase Brown falls on. Like, if they were so confident in Chase Brown, they would have drafted it. They would have waited and drafted a guy. They wouldn't have signed anybody. But they signed Zach Moss at the end of day one. They announced that they were cutting Joe Mixon. Then they said they were trading Joe Mixon, and they signed Zach Moss right after that. So I think, and Brandon and I were talking about this, I give a little more credence to the Gus Edwards thing than he does. I give some credence to this Zach Moss thing too.
I think we as fantasy players need to literally figure out that there's only going to be three or four backs that are going to take all the work. Like, those guys are roster foundational pieces, and we're going to have to get used to split time backs, and we're going to have to really look at who can be efficient with those carries and who can be explosive with those carries and with the low carry volume. So moving forward, I think honestly, we're going to have to kind of, I used to be a very much a heavy running back kind of guy. And I've in the last 3 years have kind of switched completely to the other side, where I'm favoring wide receivers much more greatly over some of these committee backs that we want to take the job. But it's just not how the real NFL works anymore, boys. It's just not.
Well, and the reason why it's not is because these freaking college guys are becoming just high-end athletes, man. They continue to chug these guys out to where there's no other option in the NFL but to run a committee. I mean, you can't continue to grab these guys like Blake Corum every single year, Jonathan Brooks every single year, and after 5 years expect any of these guys that are – 6 or 7 or 8 years around not to be in a timeshare. Mike, go ahead. I know I cut you off.
No. Sense. So I think the one thing that we haven't talked about is the impact of Mixon getting traded down to Houston.
Oh, baby.
He goes into a scheme. He goes into the same scheme that he was running in Cincinnati. They cleared out Singletary. Singletary is not back. We saw that Dameon Pierce does not fit in that Bobby Slowick zone scheme. We know that Joe Mixon does, and that's
I disagree. I saw a stat.
You can be pissed off about his efficiency, but the guy was carrying the whole load in Cincinnati. Okay, the guy was carrying all of it, and that is where people got. You can deal with some inefficiency if the volume is there. If you see that Houston does not draft anybody behind Joe Mixon and anybody behind Dameon Pierce, wheels up for Mixon, because Mixon is not coming off the field at all next year. Okay. And he signed a 3-year deal, man. They made a big commitment to the guy.
So what?
That's where everybody wanted Saquon to go. That's where
everybody
wants
Saquon to go. We want Saquon there.
Well, Saquon's a better zone scheme runner. I mean, he has better decision making in the backfield. Plus, he's got younger, fresh. Well, I don't know how much younger and fresher legs he's got than Mixon, but
he's got more juice. He's got more juice.
The stats, though, are not very good. I mean, Mixon's zone efficiency is just a hair above Dameon Pierce's zone efficiency. But I guess if you're going to take that path, Brandon, and saying that Mixon was getting the entire lion's share versus you had Devin Singletary in there taking a lot of it. So zone efficiency doesn't, you know, having a tick higher zone efficiency on a low side is a lot different when you're running the ball significantly more. You can take the volume out of that. So I could give you that. But I have to leave now. I don't want the conversation to stop because Mike's barely got going. But it's up to you guys if you want to stop. But here's the thing I wanted to ask before I leave, because Mike and Shane, it's like the first time we've got on to talk about rookies with them. So I'd like them to take this question before I get out of here. Mike and Shane, I'd like to get your takes, and I'll start with Shane because I brought it to Mike, but I'll start with Shane. I want to know, because last year or a year before, I know that Shane really liked Sky Moore, and you know, that seemed to not fall through. But I'd love to know a couple of your guys after getting some time with this class. You know, Mike had just talked about Isaac Arendo. I stole that from him, so now he can't. Okay. Mm-hmm. But a couple of your guys, even if we've talked about him, Brandon and I, we've talked ad nauseum with our guys. And that is a word, but
that is a word. God, but it took us an hour, but we finally got a real word out of it.
I was reeling back.
Hold on a second. I got it right here. Before I answer that question, we talked about declination. So let me just, in some terms, it's actually was properly used bats, but
it's a real word. It's a real word.
It's typically used.
It just shows how stupid you are that we convinced you that wasn't a real word.
Yeah. No, here we go. In astronomy, it's the angular distance of a point north to south. Yeah. Effectively, declination when used as a noun, which means to lessen, to slope down, and to refuse. So Matthew, we gave you shit, but I guess you kind of pulled it out of the ass. So
he did.
You there. Yeah. Okay. So then going back to your question, because you brought it to me here, I'm fully on board with there's a big top three, right? We've talked about him in nauseam. By we, I mean, of course, you and Brandon have talked about him in nauseam. It's Harrison, it's Neighbors, it's Adunze. Adunze, to me, is done enough throughout the pre-draft process where he's in that conversation for me. From there, like, I don't know, Troy Franklin, he disappointed at the combine. So there's a lot of warning flags out there for Troy Franklin. I've watched, because Brandon, you've been a big Brian Thomas guy. So I've gone
both.
I like to use the dynasty.
Yeah, it was me first.
Let me get my take, okay? So you guys like Brian Thomas, right? But yes. I've watched some of his tape. I like to go to Dynasty Nerds. They've got the film room, and it's the all 12 film, right? So you get to see everything.
Nice.
He's a big play kind of player. But I really worry about just his real fit. Like, to me, he's like a Cortland Sutton type player, right? Where in the right scheme, he could have some blow up games, but consistently, like maybe a wide receiver 3/flex where you're comfortable putting him into your lineup. In today's NFL, the player that I'm really, really starting to gravitate towards is Lad McConkey. Lad McConkey, man.
Yeah.
He had his Georgia Pro Day this week. He looks quick. He looks agile. He looks good. Like he can get open. Kind of, I guess he's smallerish white wide receiver, right? So the de facto comp.
I don't see the color.
Such racism. Such racism.
Say, the de facto comps typically will go to like the Julian Edelmans of the world,
we're gonna
right?
Clip
the
Wes
Walkers of the world. And listen, you look at his speed and you look at his agility. Like that's the type of
say it he can be. Say it.
Well, you no, but here's the thing. Early on in this career, there's probably a very good chance that he's going to be playing out of the slot, right? But in the right situation with a good quarterback that can actually distribute him the ball, the man could be an absolute PPR machine. Like he has that in his range of outcomes. And there's this prevailing drumbeat that more and more, even though he doesn't really have the production.
He was injured.
He was injured. Yeah, exactly, because he was injured, right? So he doesn't have the production profile, but he's got that talent profile he's looking like he's going to be a late round one pick, which means that there's a very good chance he could end up in one of these teams that is a good team, right?
If Vlad McConkey gets first round draft capital, if Vlad McConkey's the one that gets drafted to Buffalo or something like that, it's definitely on. That's about the time that I will really buy into him as more than just that early second to mid second round pick. And if you listen to this podcast long time ago, Brandon and I clearly stated he was the best route runner in the class. Yeah. Once you start looking at him and you start realizing it, that he is with all these other guys in this great wide receiver class, Lad McConkey's your best route runner.
It's true.
He easily could end up in a Deontay Johnson-esque situation and have a production level that might be able to kick up a little bit. Lad McConkey, Shane, that's a great one. Mike, I think he might have took your Lad McConkey, and I took your Isaac Garendo. Now we're putting you really on the spot here because Lad McConkey's been mocked to the Eagles a lot. Just kind of saying.
I don't want him.
No, I don't want him either.
No, and I don't want him. That's fine, but I think Lad McConkey's a great, because if Devontae Smith is going to play the outside, then Lad, we need somebody on the inside cooking. So, anyway, go ahead, Mike, to end this podcast here.
Give me some Tez Walker, right?
So, oh, baby!
So you look 6'1", 193, 4.36, pre-combine. Some comps that I saw out of him were Christian Kirk, Steph Diggs, Tyler Lockett. When you throw that
speed, yes,
that really juices him up. So you give me Tez Walker to Buffalo in the second or third round.
Oh my God. I will lose it.
I think I kind of like that. The other one, and then a couple of these pass catching running backs, you look at Ray Davis and Dylan Lobby. If they end up in the right spot, they could 100% be a thing. And then we'll talk about the tight ends a little bit later, but I kind of like the combine. A lot of the interviews I heard with Theo Johnson were good. So actually,
Theo is absolutely steaming
freaking nature.
It would not surprise me if you see Theo Johnson end up on the Eagles as the Dallas Goedert replacement.
Mm-hmm. Or even second round capital for Theo Johnson. I mean, he is absolutely steamed up. He's been a late round or a late process riser. Great combine. Everything you hear about him, interviews, everything. He's a grind horse. Brandon, I'll give you the question too. I know we've talked a lot about rookies, but we need a little bit of love here. And then we'll close it out here. Go ahead, Brandon. Give me a guy you love. Give me a guy you love. Ever since, you know, because we've talked pre-combine a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So post-combine guy came
out.
Post-combine,
the guy I really like that I'm seeing more and more, I'm watching more and more of him, is I took him in at the 3-9 in this draft, and that's Javon Baker. I think this guy is a legitimate outside X that can dominate the outside, can score from anywhere. He still only ran, you know, in the 4-5 range, but he's a bigger guy, 6'2". He's a longer guy, but this guy, when he is attacking the football, I don't think there's anybody more fun in this draft class for me to watch than him. Like he, the way he adjusts to the football when they are bad throw after bad throw to him, it's pretty elite at what he does with tracking the football. That's a guy that's a late riser for me. That's moving up my boards. I was choosing between Baker, Brendan Rice, in the draft that we're doing, and I chose Baker because I just think he's a more complete receiver. And a little bit more athletic, but that's a guy that I like a lot that should be going around that wide receiver. I have him around stacked up right around wide receiver 13, 14.
I'm going to button it up right here. Sorry. I'm not going to name a guy, but Mike, Devontae Walker had to have the speed he came out with in the combine 4.36, and nobody's talking about it. He has the size of an AD Mitchell, of a Brian Thomas. He's not as big as AD, but, you know, he's not getting – it's only because he was getting talked about in the top five squares pre-combine. Yep. And then the Senior Bowl came out, and he had just not the greatest Senior Bowl. He's outshined by a couple of these guys, nervous, but they came into the combine 4.36. I mean, come on. This class has you juiced.
It has so much juice at all positions with speed. That's what's so great about it. And the good thing is it's awesome when you see a guy that you think is a 4-3 guy on tape and then he does it. And it's just like, God damn it, that feels good to be able to stand that. Or
even more awesome when you're AD Mitchell and you think he's a 4-5 guy and he's a 4-3 guy. So,
well, hey, that's – no, it's not. In my opinion, that's worse because he doesn't play to his speed, man. That's he doesn't play –
there's
speed.
Upside. There's
and that
upside.
tells me he's processing when he's running routes. That's what that means to me.
That comes from experience. And I mean, he's because of the speed, he's got to work through that speed, right? And that'll come with maturity.
Also,
that'll come
he's
with
tall.
Time.
If you're tall, I mean, sometimes it takes technique to learn through some of that. And if you have the availability, see, that's the thing. If you're a 4-5 guy, it's hard to teach speed. Okay,
right.
You're a 4-5 guy. Hard to teach it.
Yep.
But if you're a 4-3 guy, you can teach a lot of stuff coming off that. Sorry, Brandon and I will continue
the
conversation.
I agree with you.
The thing about AD Mitchell, though, Brandon, is he's still young, right? He's still only I ran this morning, so he's 21.4. So he's still very, very young.
Oh,
he's got time to develop into his body.
He's got 4 years before he's got 4 years.
He looks, I mean, when he gets it going, man, it's kind of blasphemy a little bit, but he looks a little bit like CeeDee Lamb. I'm just going to say it. He kind of does when he runs the ball a little bit after the yards after the catch. That's what I see a little bit with him. I was just shocked when I saw him run in the 4.3s because it didn't show it on tape. But that's just
Well, I love being with you guys again. So it's awesome to be back with you guys. Hopefully you could do this again soon.
Yeah, we'll do it soon. I'm going to close out the show here, gentlemen, because I know Matt's got a hard stop. So listen, there's been some life stuff going on. Mike and I haven't really had a chance to be on the show, but we're back in action, baby. We're actually going to be on here with Matt, with Brandon. We're going to be talking about rookies. We're going to be talking about best ball, some best ball strategy. We're going to be talking a lot of NFL draft talk coming up. And listen, for those of you who are just finally starting to get into this rookie conversation and you're trying to get a pulse on our perspective, go back, watch some of the videos that Brandon and Matt did. They've got some mock draft video. They've got a breakdown by position. If you want to just get to know these players, there's a lot of draft content out there, but we like to listen, right? You're walking on a treadmill. You want to listen, go check out amazing stuff. So I just recently moved. And so when I was packing, I would have it in my ear. I'd have Brandon, I'd have Matt, and I'd just be laughing because they like to argue as well. So if you like just generally entertainment, go check out the podcast.
He just likes to poke the bear. He pokes the bear repeatedly, man.
Oh, just always. Sorry, I'm just messing up with our screens here. But last thing too is go check out dfsarmy.com. It's where we hail. It's what gives us this platform to come and talk to you folks out there. And guess what? Just this week, we had another winner of $100,000. We talk about it every time on this freaking show. People are winning real life-changing money every single day, every single week over at dfsarmy.com, dfsarmy.com. Check out the link in the show description below. And listen, last little plug here, guys. We do this because we enjoy doing this, but it certainly helps if you can like, you can subscribe, you know.
Yes.
Click that bell so that every time we do go live, you get a notification. We're going to be a little bit more active here, making sure that we're getting at least weekly content out to you folks as we lead up into the draft. We're dynasty degenerates, so this is our absolute favorite time of year as we learn and dissect these rookie profiles. So thank you for tuning in. For Matt, who jumped off the show, for Brandon, for Mike, I'm Flex Shane, and we are the DFS Army Fantasy Football Show. Go get some. Knowing that. Diamonds in my teeth, I got a lot of shine.